So Wally, part of the reason that you chose the VOR approach here is that you want to have two sources. You want to have the iPad and your handheld VOR to cross-check against each other. My question is, what happens if you're halfway down this approach and you look at the iPad and it shows you right on course, and then you look at the handheld and you've got a three-quarter scale deflection? Which one are you going to trust, or what are you going to do then?
That's really a great question. I tend to think that the VOR deviation indicator on the handheld would likely be the more accurate, assuming the VOR is performing properly. Hopefully I can get a backup with ATC and they can convince me that either I'm on course or not on course. But that's why I like the backup. At least if they're both together, I'm very confident. If they're not together, probably the best thing to do is do a missed approach and try to figure out what's going on if they're very far off.
Sure. And you probably need the iPad to hit the step downs on that approach or ATC. And so that I think is a good question, probably for Kevin. Wally, you mentioned that maybe you could get vectors here or help on the step downs, but of course you don't have a transponder. So how likely is it that ATC might be able to track a primary target here and call those step downs for you?
I can answer that. Sorry, Kevin, to jump sure. in on you. But I called Casper Approach and asked that question. So they said they could quite reliably give us that information. And in fact, the controller was so eager, he said, come on out and we'll do it.
Oh, nice.
He wanted to practice it. So at least at Casper, they were pretty confident they could do that, which would really be a big help because they could confirm that off-course situation probably as well then too.
So I'll add one little bit of a tidbit of information to that is that that answer's changed a little bit since January 1st, 2020, with the ADS-B rules coming into effect. And the biggest way that that affects things is it changes the criteria at which maintenance folks are able to take down radar sites for preventative maintenance or repairs or those types of things. So with ADS-B, every approach control now has some version of STARS automation. And that allows multiple sources for position information on aircraft to be displayed on the controller scope. And it's all seamless to the controller. But because of that, and because of the widespread use of ADS-B now, they can take down radar sites during the day, during the week, when normally in the past, that wouldn't be when preventative maintenance was done. So, you know, they may or may not be able to get you on primary radar depending on the schedule of other things that are going on. So I would say less likely now than prior to January 1, 2020.
Yeah, Doug.
Yeah, I agree with Wally's choice, but addressing your question, Ryan, which would you prefer, the handheld to the iPad? I would certainly prefer the handheld. However, I have to raise the question, how many pilots still do their 30-day VOR checks, let alone on their handheld? Okay. Now, I'll admit that many applicants who come to me for practical tests, for a private practical test, their missed question, according to the learning statement code, was recall VORs. And I'll ask them, so do you remember what a VOR is? And they'll say, well, I hear that's the way you old guys used to navigate, just for what that's worth, okay? But the other part of it is using iPad for the accuracy. And during COVID, I stopped providing training the second week of March and didn't resume until the third week of May. During that time, I was flying once a week with a safety pilot. And I thought this would be a great opportunity to practice using my iPad for navigation, especially because with Stratus providing information to it. Furthermore, I had an AHARS, and I did several approaches with the D-bar centered on the approach, doing them step downs. They were RNAVs, took it down to minimums. I did have a safety pilot with me. I had a hood on. When I broke out and looked for the runway, expecting it to be right in front of me, it was nowhere near in front of me. And so I really have to question using an iPad for any kind of accuracy. Just for that's worth. And I have some more comments about using them as well, but I'm going to back out for now and let Tom go.
Yeah, Tom.
Good point, Doug. I practiced that recently using an iPad and the sort of the backup battery displayed L3 Trilogy in my panel. So it was simulating a failure of everything else. And I was challenged. This was during a BPPP session that I had a few months ago. And I'll tell you, it's the first time I'd done it that way. And The accuracy of the device was fine. It was my accuracy. It wasn't that good. I mean, I did get to the runway ultimately, but it was, you know, you go back and look at it, and there's a lot of zigzagging going on as I was trying to kind of split my attention between the small panel mount battery operated display and the iPad. I think a couple more sessions of practicing, which I should go out and do, would help a lot. But I mean, it can be done, and certainly is much better than what we would have faced years ago without any sort of backup. But I do have a question for the group, though. Thoughts about the need for an external antenna for your handheld device to be worth much of anything? Which I happen to have, by the way, a completely separate antenna with its own jack, and I can just connect the cable and generally get really good reception. But I have tried using a handheld in flight without that, and it's almost worthless.
Yeah, Bruce, and then Doug.
Yeah, well, first to Tom's question, I agree. If you're going to use a handheld, then you need an external antenna for it to be of any value in these situations. But to go back to the point that a couple of other folks have made already, using the iPad as sort of your primary navigation in an emergency like this is something that I've actually practiced several times with a safety pilot, and I found it to be quite useful. And so I'm kind of inclined to go with choice four, because A, I don't think that many pilots are really flying around with handhelds with navigation functions that they can reach easily in the cockpit and then use proficiently. I'm a little concerned about the disagreement issue that we've talked about before. And the remember, we're doing a VOR approach, so we're close to the station. The needles get wonky in a panel VOR when you're flying the VOR approach. Imagine what they might do with a handheld. So I really recommend that you go out and do what Tom just did, practice that a little bit. Yeah, the first time it's a little bit strange because it's just a new experience, but with a little bit of practice, I found it to be quite accurate. If your little blue airplane is on the heavy black lines, you're on course. Now, the only issue then that comes up is how do you fly vertical guidance? And Wally mentioned in his response the little instruments you can show at the bottom of the screen, and for example, in ForeFlight, and one of those is your current climb descent gradient, which I always have on when I'm flying a departure or an approach, especially in low IFR conditions. And that could really help you set up a glide path, as it were.
Yeah, that's a great point. Doug?
So I've got actually now three different comments. The first one I'd like to mention is about receptivity in the external antenna. Absolutely, an external antenna is proper. But a lot of folks don't realize if they're just using the handheld, and this is a tip to make it more valuable, the little rubber ducky antenna, if we're holding the handheld upright, that's great for communication. But think about our VOR antennas on the airplane. They are horizontal. And to get best navigation reception in a handheld, you have to hold it with that rubber ducky antenna horizontal. And it's awful hard to look at this handheld unless it's down in your lap. So that's number one. The second thing is where we place it. And I have noticed, and I noticed this years ago before we had this technology, but when the GPS, I had a 196 with a little panel, and I mounted it in the center of my yoke. And what I found as I flew was that the GPS was not mounted level in the yoke. And I found myself wanting to level the GPS, not looking at the attitude indicator. And it was really, it took great discipline to not look at the actual device level, but the display on the device. So where you place this is critically important. And then the last one, I can't remember what it was. So I'll stop here.
Just say the word two and we'll edit that into the... I have two things to say. Yeah, well, and in this situation, you know, we don't even have a Stratus or something providing the GPS position because that was, maybe didn't have a battery backup or whatever. We're just on the internal battery or the internal GPS of the iPad. Does it make any difference if we've got a Stratus hooked up to it with the battery backup and you've got AHARs and synthetic vision and a more accurate GPS position? Does that change it for anybody?
I don't know whether it will, but I remember the third thing, and that does have to do with the vertical. If we know our numbers for the aircraft, we're keeping the wings level, we're tracking the desired track. If you know your numbers, just a power reduction should be able to, power reduction and a pitch change should give you the vertical rate required. And to me, that doesn't become too much of an issue.
So we've got Bruce leaning towards the GPS approaches. And is everybody else, what's everybody else thinking here? Are we in agreement on the VOR otherwise, or Kevin?
I personally am in agreement with Bruce on this one. I would rather fly one of the RNAV approaches using the iPad. And for me, it's going to be the difference of the how easy it is to interpret what I'm looking at and the trend information looking at the iPad versus a handheld is going to be a really clunky way to do it. And I doing a partial panel approach in IMC is not when I want to be trying to juggle a handheld and interpret what I'm seeing in there in a useful way to get below the weather.
Tom.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go there too, particularly if I have the option, like you mentioned, Ryan, about having a Stratus or something like that to give me better guidance and also the synthetic vision. Partly because I've tried to use one of the handhelds and fly a localizer approach. I'm not sure I've tried the VOR, but I've tried the localizer approach. And boy, it is not, it's all over the place and really difficult to interpret. And then you figure you're trying to hold that, because since we don't have a mount in this case, trying to hold that and the iPad and keep track of both and going back and forth, I think that could be really pretty distracting. I believe the iPad would by far be the more accurate choice and simpler to manage.
Yeah, I had a student recently whose backup plan was to use his handheld and fly a localizer approach. And we went out and tried one and it wasn't pretty. So it's definitely something you've got to practice with. Scott.
Yeah, I agree. I'm on the Bruce bandwagon because ultimately, you know, I've tried handhelds in the past and very disappointed. You know, I can't even sometimes talk to, you know, on the radio to the FBO and I'm sitting only, you know, 20 feet from them. So I don't trust any kind of handheld device. It just seems to be really quirky because I'm someone who uses an iPad a lot. I'm more familiar with that, you know, kind of at a point where I'm more comfortable with that, with what it's telling me.
Bruce, then Wally.
I'd just like to reiterate that you know, we're all getting used to flying with the iPads. We're used to looking at approach charts as we fly approaches just for reference. So I think it's a more natural thing to do when you're stressed in this emergency. And then the other thing I point out is that at the flight school where I teach, when we teach compass turns, and I use that phrase in quotes, we actually sort of go through the exercise, but we really teach people, if you really lost your heading indicator, use the GPS you've got, whether it's on your iPad or in the panel, and fly GPS tracks. That's a much more stable, accurate way to fly. And it gets you close enough in these kinds of situations, assuming you don't have a really strong wind, to accomplish the goal.
Yeah, and Wally was saying that he would use the iPad as the primary on this approach. Having it be the VOR approach then at least gives you the option that if you lose GPS position on this iPad's internal GPS, you have something to fall back on. You're not completely blind then. And Wally, go ahead. I think you were, yeah.
Thanks for making my point, Ryan. That's exactly right. And I can't disagree with those who choose a GPS approach, because clearly the GPS to 2.6, as you and I spoke about, would be my second choice. There's no step downs. It's a nice, easy approach. And I selected the VOR simply because I've got another piece of equipment that can either verify things are going okay or not. I learned my iPads do not have cellular service, so I do not get position on my iPad when I lose the Stratus, but my iPhone does. So I actually practiced a couple of approaches with my little iPhone looking at it, and it works out pretty good. But I can't argue if there was a real advantage to a GPS approach, runway length or obstacles or terrain, that would be my second choice.
Doug?
I'd say irrespective of the choice, I think to me, really the most important thing of this whole scenario, and perhaps Tom, you would agree with me, is that if you haven't practiced this, it's a hell of a time to try and figure it out in a genuine emergency. I know I had to struggle with it. I think Tom has had to struggle with it. Bruce is, every one of us who's tried this, it's not intuitive. It is not easy. And if you haven't practiced this, and there's so many pilots who maintain their currency without ever getting an IPC, without ever getting an in-flight evaluation, and have never flown partial panel since their instrument practical test, which might have been 10, 15 years ago. The most important thing here is to be prepared for this partial panel experience. And if you have the equipment, using that equipment to do it.
Yeah. One of the best ways to make it more intuitive is to learn what the best way to set up something like ForeFlight is to give you the information in a way that you're used to looking at it. So like with ForeFlight, you can load the procedure and set up the map screen to give you an HSI right there. That's a presentation that you're used to looking at. Of course, it's in a different spot, so it's not natural. You still have to practice with it, but it makes it a little bit more like the normal approach. I want to take it back to the planning stage for a second. And Wally suggested that we should be in the pre-flight on a flight like this, considering what we might do, you know, how we might deal with an electrical failure or something like this that takes out so much of our capability. Would anybody have planned this flight differently to not leave yourself potentially in this situation where there's no VFR anywhere near? Why?
I frankly would not have taken the flight under those circumstances. I think if you're operating an airplane with one alternator, you need to consider your entire trip and what are my options if I lose this alternator, because you need to be on the ground in a pretty quick time. It's going to get real dark and quiet as happened to our pilot. And frankly, if I don't have a way to get to VFR with my one alternator airplane, I'm not going to go. If I can't get some VFR conditions by turning west or south or something, I'm simply just not going to put myself in that spot.
Scott?
I agree with Wally because I work with a lot of pilots doing one-on-one training, and we go through the flight with them. And 90% of the time, I'm concerned that there's not a VFR location. I mean, anything can happen. And, you know, you don't want to find yourself, you know, searching for good weather with not enough fuel to get there. So to me, that's a critical element from a go or stay decision on many of these kind of cases, because, you know, we know that these things happen and you get failures from time to time.
Yeah, I can even sneak up on you on just like a local training flight where you're thinking, well, I'm just going to do a couple approaches, so 2 hours of fuel is fine. Well, if it's solid IFR for 2 hours around you, if you're flying something like a Cherokee 140, that's not unreasonable. You're going to want some more fuel. So even something like planning this flight so we have a stop halfway and then we've got enough fuel maybe to get back to decent conditions would have been a good way to do it. So back on the approach, let's say everything is working. I mean, nobody wanted anything to do with the ILS, it seemed like. But what if everything is working? I mean, it's just such a natural thing to default to taking the ILS. And it's got the lowest minimums here, but it still takes your Cherokee out over the high terrain and out of your way. Would anybody pick the ILS if everything was working here even? Or would you ask for something different?
Well, I think they indicated when we arrived that that was the runway they were on at that moment, right? They were doing ILSs to runway 3. If everything was working, I'd do the ILS to runway 3.
All right. Well, I mean, there's a lot to talk about in a situation like this. And we talked for 20 minutes about some of the details of the technique, some of the nuances, the planning things. And I think the bottom line is it's not enough, as Doug pointed out a minute ago, to just say, if this happens, I'm going to fly an iPad approach or I'm going to fly an approach with my handheld. You really have to look for the sorts of failures that are going to change the techniques that you have to use, like in this case, and then practice those techniques so that when it comes down to it in an emergency situation, it's not the first time you've tried flying an approach with an iPad or flying an approach with a handheld.